You're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin, Jeff Eason, and new panelist Zach Sitter. Today, we're looking back on our personal histories and some of the moments that we remember when we first heard a song and sort of those when lightning struck kind of personal histories. And one of my examples is remembering hearing Rainy Day Women by Bob Dylan for the first time when I was off at camp. Remember one of the camp counselors playing it during pottery class, the unedited version. I'll never forget that, as well as the first time that I heard music from the German group Can at a record store in Charlotte back in the 80s before any of their records were reissued, and being very disappointed that I couldn't go and buy it right then and there. That's where we're going today on What It Is.
For me, the one that really strikes me is the first big audio Dynamite album. I was a big fan of The Clash when I was in college, and their last two albums were just terribly disappointing. They were, you know, just nowhere near London Calling or even Sandinista for that matter. And I had no idea that Mick Jones had even formed a new band. I went to this outdoor party in Durham, North Carolina, and we were all out there, you know, drinking beer and having fun and everything like that. And then somebody put on the brand new Big Audio Dynamite album. And I was just floored. It sounded like nothing I'd ever heard before, but there was definitely that hint of The Clash to it. None of their subsequent albums have ever hit me quite so much like that one, but I'll go back to that album every once in a while and play it, and I'm right there at that party in Durham again.
For me, the Sex Pistols' Nevermind the Bollocks album, which I heard when I was about 12, so this was in the mid-80s, not really all that long after it had come out when you think about it, 7 or 8 years. But, you know, for me at that time, I think I had, you know, certainly heard lots of Top 40, you know, 1980s Top 40. I'd heard New Wave and bands like Eurythmics and Blondie, and I liked that stuff. But this was the first really aggressive and negative music that had kind of come across my parents' turntable. And it was really transformative, even though there was no real, you know, context for me at that time. There wasn't much of a punk scene in Atlanta in the mid-80s. But it was just the combination of the visceral quality of the music and the venom of the lyrics and the vocals, which, you know, it's kind of hard to recover now because punk has been so packaged and commodified, especially, I think, that album. But there's a real kind of rawness and energy to it that was just completely out of left field for me.
I'm listening and surprised y'all are rock and rollers. I think mine goes back to childhood, really. My first lightning strikes would have been my dad. My dad played music, and I remember on summer nights, he'd come home from work, and my mother must have made us go to bed before the sun went down or something. I think she made us go to bed at like 7:30 or something. So I'd get out of bed in my room and I'd open the window so I could hear my dad playing on the back porch. And he would play harmonica. He'd sing. He had done a lot of swing music, but on the back porch, he would take his harmonica out and he would play kind of plaintive things from a childhood in Georgia. He'd play Stephen Foster and he'd play the Yellow Rose of Texas and things like that. And it made a lasting impression on me. I'm still doing those songs. Then I think my next lightning strike, I think I remember meeting this girl who was very hip and cool. It was my first hippie, you know, and here was this girl. She had curly hair and glasses like John Lennon, and she told me about public radio. And I remember listening to public radio and hearing people like Gil Scott-Heron and Tom Rush. And it was like, oh, wow, man, that's really edgy stuff. And it was a real lightning strikes experience.
There was one history that I heard from a fellow DJ at WNCW, Scotty Robertson, and he had his sort of a lightning strike moment when his grandfather confiscated his Jimi Hendrix record and smashed it to bits. And from that point forward, he was just galvanized. You know, he was like, well, if he feels that way, then I'm going all out.
I had a moment like that when I was in about sixth grade. I was at my friend Dwayne Johnson's house, and we were listening to a Steppenwolf record, and the, you know, the Pusher Man song. Well, there's a curse word in there, and his father didn't hear that it was actually sort of an anti-drug message song from a rock band, which was very rare in those days. All he heard was the curse word, and came into the room and yanked it off the turntable and snapped it in half over his knee. One of my big moments where a song kind of just gelled in my mind was when I was in second grade in near Pensacola, Florida. We were able to bring in singles, and during playtime, we would take turns putting our singles, our 45s, on this record player in Miss Porter's class. And one of the kids, I don't even know who it was, brought in Johnny Rivers' Secret Agent Man.
Ooh,
and I was just totally enthralled, went home and bugged my parents for days until they went and found a copy of Secret Agent Man for me. And it's still one of my favorite songs.
And some of these histories can play in a kind of negative direction, too. Now, this wasn't the first time I heard the song, but I have that association with the Pretenders' Brass in Pocket with a family vacation to Arizona in 1980. And I was listening to that song in the airplane as we were about to take off. But unfortunately, my dad had to stay in Arizona and continue work instead of come back with us. And I'm looking out the window of the airplane into the terminal where Dad's looking out the window at us and listening to Brass in Pocket, and I never liked that song since.
Wow.
That's funny. It reminds me kind of on a different thread, but of a family vacation again from maybe when I was 9 or 10. And no, I must have been a little bit older, 11 or 12 probably. And we were driving to some lake up in North Georgia from Atlanta, and my little sister, who's several years younger than me, and I were fighting for control of the boombox because we didn't have a stereo in the car. And so the soundtrack on that vacation consisted of alternating between She's So Unusual, the Cyndi Lauper album, which oddly enough was my choice, and the Annie soundtrack, which was my sister's. And although I do like Jay-Z's Hard Knock Life, in general, Annie does not hold such fond memories for me.
Oh, I guess vacations, there's another topic for you, Joe. Vacations really evoke a whole music thing and stuff. But I remember the soundtrack to Jaws, dating myself there, at the beach, going to see Jaws on the beach. And every time I looked at the water for the longest time, I still do sometimes, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I hear that, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, fortunately for me, my parents had fairly good taste in music. And so a lot of times these cross-country trips would be, you know, kind of Kris Kristofferson and Gordon Lightfoot and the Beatles and Bob Dylan, they would be in the background. So I can imagine having to listen to the Jaws soundtrack.
I like that. Yeah. My mother listened to Anna Moff and Sergio Franchi doing opera. It probably pushed me over the edge to folk music.
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. Your memories of when you first heard a song, for good or for bad. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin, Jeff Eason, and Zach Sitter. Until next time.